unbiased evaluation has to come into play to really make of this input of these directions that you're getting.
Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast for 6, 7, and 8-figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers, part of the amazing FBA podcast family. If you want to scale fast, target a 7-figure exit, and enjoy the process, then keep listening. Do you want to grow your business bigger and faster? A free audit of your Amazon business can help you see and avoid threats and find missed golden opportunities. I generally charge $150 or more per hour, but this would be free. You can be a reseller or a brand owner. All I ask is that you're doing a few thousand dollars a month in sales already. Just visit myamazonaudit.com, scroll down, click on Amazon Audit, and book in a time. That's myamazonaudit.com. Look forward to speaking to you on your audit. Hey folks, welcome back to the 10K Collective Mastermind for 6, 7, 8-figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers. Today we are talking to the former naval captain, Anthony Simmons. Dr. Anthony Simmons now works in academia as well, and he's a specialist in dealing with data overwhelm. And today we're going to talk about the solutions to the problems that we flagged up in the previous episode, which are basically saturating your brain with too much data to take on board, and then decision paralysis, which kind of results out of that. So today we're going to talk about how to solve that. And I think for e-commerce and digital marketers, digital operators in general, there's never been a greater time where we have too much data and we have to have a handle on this. And I think getting a sense of this from a different perspective from somebody who's had to do it in a war zone is very, very helpful. Stay tuned and I hope you enjoy the show. So I want to talk about the other problem before we move on to solutions that you mentioned, which I think is really, really, really important: decision paralysis. We all suffer from that anyway. I think entrepreneurs, because they're often on their own, do digital-based business owners are doubly prone to that because we're even more isolated. And then, of course, we've got technology adding confusion. So talk to me about how decision paralysis works, and then we'll get into solutions.
You know, sometimes, we were talking earlier, some people like things convenient, okay? And sometimes making a decision could be not so convenient. We talk about divergent mind versus conversion minds. Hey, going grocery shopping. Some people don't want to have to stick to a list because they may see two or three things they really want. Okay, so now we take this and tie these different tools and pumping out all this information. This is like, gets really, people get excited about it, you know, and they say, I'm just going to see how much I can really see and learn. They get to the point where they entertain the information they are acquiring to the point where they lose sight of why they actually have the information. So, and as they lose focus of the objective or the goals, and they more involved in the capability of these systems, and that pushes people to a point where they become overwhelmed with information, and that's when the paralysis sticks in, because they're more excited about reproducing more information than they are really getting after their end game state.
I like that a lot. End state. This is very sort of US military sort of speak for goals, I'm guessing. But I mean, I like that. That really reminds really, so I'm just making some notes. By the way, you can hear tapping, folks. I'm making notes. It'll be over at the blog as usual, 10kcollective.com. Yes, I couldn't agree more with that. I see so much of that with social media use. People get so obsessed with putting stuff on social media. I've been guilty of that with the podcast myself, that, you know, it takes sometimes somebody with common sense, like my wife, like, Mike, is it making money? And I always think, yeah, that's a very good question. And then I try and make sure that it ties back into that, you know, I mean, is it building goodwill and a community? Yeah, I think it does do that. But, you know, does that translate into money or not? And I think people get so particular. Social media is absolutely lethal for that. But I think AI tools are becoming very, very close to that, like total falling down a rabbit hole thing for about 6 months at a time, right? Do you see that with your small business consulting clients? And if so, what, you know, how do we begin to turn out our way away from that?
Well, we do it. And I have kept this drumbeat about we have to keep, you know, the goals and objectives in mind, and we have to be focused there. Otherwise, people just continue to sell you products, and it goes back to IT support. I can get on the phone with an IT person now, even with web design, and they can tell me all the nice fancy things they can do and that. Okay, but I want to serve this particular purpose, but they don't want to entertain that. They want to tell me how much they can do, you know, with this internet design. This is my objective, but it's just so hard sometimes to get from all the capabilities out there until getting towards the objective. So that's the challenge that I see. And the way to overcome this, the mitigator is you really have to understand, know what it is you want to get after. You have to draft it at end state. And regardless of the capabilities these tools offer, you have to stay focused on the end state. And if you don't have the discipline for that, then you will fall into that trap of just buying something that, you know, it's going to be, you're not even going to be able to use. It's going to make your life more complicated because you're going to have more solutions than you can, than you need to get after your problem. And so, yeah. And then too many solutions that become what I mentioned to earlier, you know, that illusion, what equates to paralysis, you know, paralysis by analysis. You don't want to get to that point.
Absolutely. Okay. So we're getting into the realm of solutions now. So let's talk solutions. So keeping the goals in mind is, as you said, the drumbeat, or the end state, as you call it. So metadata, you talked about a lot. So how do we distill things into something usable? You've got the example from the Fast Company, I think, that you're going to share. So tell us a bit more about that.
That's the challenge with AI now. You know, metadata, once it was the usable data, it was taking big data in the warehouses and turning it to metadata. That was all the usable information. But it goes back to what we just left when I talked about the over having been overwhelmed with big data information to the metadata became where it was not even usable, which that was this, you know, the definition for metadata was used for information. So that's why we employed technical software tools, algorithms to organize this metadata so we can actually address particular problems. You know, it's amazing that usable data now is so large that we can't get after certain problems. So then the algorithms will go in place so we can pinpoint what problem we want to solve. And now we take those algorithms and come up with all the AI world we live in today. And in that world we're in today, it's a challenge because it's a critical thinking still has to be utilized because not all responses will be valid, unbiased, or factual, or error-free. So that's the key from the Fast Company. I think her name is Heidi Avelli. She wrote this article for Fast Company that talked to this process. And that goes back to, once again, you have to have a human involved in there to see where the biases are, what's not really following certain patterns and what have you. So you got to have human logical reasoning and reflective thinking and rational thought. And unbiased evaluation has to come into play to really make sense of this input of these directions that you're getting. It goes back to the resume. You know, how much in that resume is really going to determine who this person really is. If it can't just be buzzwords, you know, sometimes that creates an issue. There's some gaps. I think that's the big thing. And then we lose people, human skills, which is the second order of a negative impact we have with AI. The one I just mentioned.
I think you're right. And I think what's interesting, for example, analyzing a resume, I would imagine that big data, you know, algorithms based on metadata, based on big data, will be all about data. But the data in a CV or a resume, as you would call it, is often false. And I think that it takes human intuition sometimes to look for the gaps. I mean, if you get a reference from somebody, and we've all had this, where I've been given references or I've read references that it's about what they, particularly maybe this is a very English thing, it's about what they don't say that tells you a lot, isn't it? I don't know if it's the same in America, but it's like, very, very, you know, polite team member or something, which like doesn't say initiative or started things or followed through. It doesn't say any of the things that you might want. And the absence of that information, for me, reading a reference or resume might be a hint that actually behind the politeness and the fear of lawsuits, somebody's saying, don't hire this person, they don't do anything. And, you know, how can the machine intuit that, right? I guess eventually they might get enough data to do that, but that's what strikes me with resumes, for example. You know, can you read between the lines? Can machines read between the lines?
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, that's what I was mentioning earlier when I talked about the multiplier. And once AI, it definitely helps you get to that decision point. It gives you more data points. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm not going to interview 100 people, but when I get down to these decision points, I'm not going to make my final decisions on AI or what have you. And hopefully I can select more resumes and talk to more people you know, based on that. And that's the point of enabler versus a multiplier. This multiplier just gives me more options, more data points, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't dictate my final solution. I will use critical thinking, human reasoning, you know, to get to that final point.
Makes total sense to me. Now, you got this wonderful framework that I want to go through. This is the four analytical phases. So I'd love to go through this. We've got diagnostic analysis, predictive analysis, and prescriptive analysis. So demystify this. How does this all work?
This is fun stuff. You know, I had an example from an instructor. And when I was at Regent, she talked about hindsight and insight and foresight. You know, hindsight is the past. What really happened? How did you get the way you are today? And insight is, you know, just living through a day based on what you experienced in the past. And then you take the two of those and you determine your foresight, you know, what you envision going to happen. So this whole analytics process, we talk about descriptive analysis. Okay, that describes, you know, where you are today. You put all the pieces. This is what you have at your disposal. Okay, and then you have all these nice tools you use, technological tools in order to advance. This is descriptive analysis, and the input that you put in there to describe is based on where the human is. So then once you have that, you know, at your disposal, then you got to say, okay, so now what's the software? What does this mean? So you take those, the information, which describes your scenario, and then you predict the behavior. What does it mean, you know, within the current landscape of where you want to go, per center? That's what it really means. And then the big piece there, then what am I going to do with this? Where did I go tomorrow? What's the future hold? So then you got to prescribe. That's prescriptive. So I take all of that, you know, I got a descriptive, then I go into my predictive, and then I prescribe my way forward. And that's what's next. Type, you know, you got the what, then what, and then what's next.
I like that framework a lot. So we got, just to reflect on this and make sure everyone's got it clear, because this is a real takeaway one, I think. Insight, so the descriptive analysis was going on the what, as you say, and you say
what, yes.
Yeah, and then diagnostic analysis, so like, you know, drilling in, and then predictive, what was going to happen next, potentially. And then prescriptive, so what are we going to do, I guess, right? Or then, yeah, what,
so
as you say?
Let me slightly say, okay, yeah. So we talk about descriptive, that's what you have, right? Then you diagnose all of that, you analyze it, okay? Or say, you know, and that's how things happen based on what you just, you know, descriptive analysis you had. Then you go into the predictive. That means what it all means, so what? That's the so what, okay? And the last piece is the way forward, the then what.
Okay. So how can we apply this in a small business context? So you're talking about the four things: descriptive analysis, diagnostic analysis, predictive analysis, prescriptive analysis. So give us an example. Walk us through some kind of small business example, if you have one, or even just a business example, if you can.
Well, I've done succession planning. I've done cultural assessments, but more so for succession planning. I go in, look at a layup. So I did a church, okay? And you look at churches, are sort of some challenge, and they had certain organizations, the entity they was rotating, you know, throughout. And there was a problem with having the talent or the people in place, you know, to replace those particular ministries. So I looked at all the outside activities. I looked at the location of the church. I looked at the educational pool there. I looked at some of the requirements they needed in order to fill those positions. That was me put all of my describing everything. Then I did a diagnostic of it. And they was going through a 2-year succession plan with all the different ministries across like 12 ministries. And so they just didn't have what it take to sustain that. They were struggling in that particular area for those successions. So then I took all the data. I looked at some of the pieces that they was faced with, you know, for the landscape. And I was able to predict how those data sets would determine, you know, how viable their plan they had in place would be. And I was able to determine it was not sustainable. So my last piece was I took, you know, the scenario and those predictions for going forward, and I was able to prescribe them a different succession plan, which was, I couldn't afford, you know, it was 2 years, was just not going to work. It was pretty much lip service. It was not enough people in the town. It was not enough, the educational systems was not supported for it. And you look at the population was continuing to decline, et cetera, et cetera. So I was able to take that entire analytical process and actually arrange a succession plan.
Do you want to grow your Amazon business bigger or faster? I bet you do. If so, a free audit of your Amazon business can help you see and avoid threats and find some golden missed opportunities. Generally, I charge at least $150 an hour these days for my time, but this is free. You can be a reseller or a brand owner. All I ask is that you're doing at least a few thousand dollars a month in sales. If you are, just go to myamazonaudit.com, scroll down, click on Amazon Audit and book in a time and we'll see each other on a Zoom call. That's myamazonaudit.com. Thank you very much for listening and I hope to see you on a call soon. So that's a very interesting problem. Now, succession planning isn't something that's that common in the small business world, but I actually know two or three business owners or businesses who are, you know, getting into their 40s, 50s, sometimes 60s, and who are actually from multi-generational businesses. So that is an actual thing for some business owners. But of course, if you're going to sell your business, then you might want to have a bit of a plan for how to hand that over as well. So that could be a relevant thing. But again, that's just one example, right? That's very interesting. Now, you got another thing about operational design here. Let's just talk briefly again. Keep it as simple as you can for us mere small business owners here, not had the benefit of working at the Pentagon. But operational design, what is that and how can that help us with, you know, making sense of all these decisions?
The operational design model, I tell you, I was introduced into that when I was in the military. You know, where I always hear people say, well, you know, it justifies the means, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just going to give an example from a military perspective. Then I talk to it from a data analytics or AI perspective. You know, that was a time when I would always say you knew what the threat was, right? It was a single AV country per se. And then, you know, we've had tons of money, you know, historically, you know, the budget was unrestricted. So you have tons of means and then you have one target. So when my ways are very simple. I got tons of options and I could make four assumptions and I could afford risk because I can adjust on the fly. Okay. So then you look at this operation design where now I have tons of ends I'm trying to get out. This is it's untenable. Like we got vulnerable conditions, right? Out there, markets are changing. We got a lot of dynamics. We got for small business, you got employee turnover. You just got a lot, tons and tons of unknowns. And now trying to determine how to keep retention in place. Okay. So then my means are maybe bonuses, maybe professional development, maybe potential pay raises, or else I can just hire more people, which costs me money, tons of money. So now, but my means are sort of limited, but the activities and the actions of these employees are all over the place. So I got to put my ways in place. How do I get out to this challenge? It could also be for your competitors. It could be since, you know, in that regard as well. So you just always got to look at your external actors, how dynamic they are. So that makes your it's a little more of a challenge for you. So now to get inside this design model, my ways. Okay. I have to be very, very austere and precise how I navigate this course here because it's very challenging. So I have to have the right assumptions. That's when the human intervention, human reasoning comes into place. I have to, you know, risk, but I can't take as much risk because it could cost me or employee can cause me to not be competitive against the market or what have you. So I took this operation design and mean waste design and means and waste design. And as we talked earlier about the problem of a human saturation, we talk about paralysis there with human paralysis. So I said, okay, now I have to refine my processes here in order to make sure I get the right information and looking at the right data in order to achieve the end that I want to achieve. If I don't define my goals, my ends are going to be all over the place. And I know my means is defined by all this big data, this overwhelming data, this metadata, you know, all this stuff that can get pumped out every second, you know, from my AI. So I have to, with this side of there, I have to integrate AI in a bit, you know, and then my assumptions is where the wisdom, you know, the human experience, et cetera, going to come into play. So I got to put my strategist and my analyst in the same space inside of that means they got to work together. And that's one of the big takeaways and the big call to action in order to get after some of the challenges that can come from AI, you know, if it's not carefully managed. So that provides me the framework you know, to manage, you know, maybe the downside of AI.
Interesting. I guess the simplest version of a strategist and analysis and analyst in the same room, more or less, if that's what you're saying, is you've got, for example, your accountant, who's by their nature an analytical person. In fact, I would argue that the only person who's not a financial manager in the company, their job's to measure stuff, right? But if you're the CEO, you've got to have a strategy for where the hell is this business going over the next 2 or 3 years? Can we afford to do, you know, new product launches, for example? Can we afford to launch a new sales channel? And then I guess another analytical person would be somebody who does digital marketing, which shows out tons of data, right? So that strikes me as very applicable to the e-commerce world very, very directly. So like this a lot. We better wrap this up because apart from anything else, I think people might be going to sit in a darkened room with a wet towel on their head to absorb this because it's quite high level thinking, but very, very thought-provoking. So obviously, go on.
Let me just give you one quick one, not on what
definitely,
but the strategic thinking, strategic acting have to happen in the same space. We're talking about elevated flat organizations, right? We're talking about external condition. So if you got one of your guys on your, one of your employees at the Lord's level is engaged in the external market. So he has to be on the same page as the strategist. So your thinking and acting happen at the same place, but things are so dynamic. So that's another aspect of that thinking and acting at the same time, your strategist and your analyst. So he's analyzing what the customer needs.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I think one of the classic ways to go wrong with a business when it gets a tiny bit bigger than just a solopreneur is to lose track of the market. And one of the classic examples of doing the opposite of that is Steve Jobs, who apparently drove his team nuts. So I can't imagine many CEOs do this, but he used to go out on Wednesdays and just go and meet end users. I'm not necessarily little old me, but you know, some business owners who would be using Macs and MacBook Pros and whatever the hell they were using. And you know, that's so unusual and so wise. I think it must be incredibly easy to get insulated from the outside world as a CEO of a huge company. But it's surprising how quickly people do it, doesn't it? Even small companies, you just get so wrapped up in managing yourself and your team and your data and your products. You forget that somebody out there is buying your stuff and loving or hating it. And as you say, this, you know, so easy to lose track of that. Well, look, tons to think about. Very, very interesting to really, you know, to draw on your, you know, the depth of thinking that you put into. It's quite amazing, the depth of thought that goes into military work. I mean, I guess you kind of hope that it was like that, but it is quite amazing to me. So very insightful. And hopefully we can apply that to our businesses. So my final question to you really is to just kind of ask like a dumb, simple question, which is, if you had one or two bits of advice for small business owners to kind of distill from today, what would those be?
Value people skills. Everyone has something to offer them. This technology guy doing a lot to move you away from your people. You always got to value them and keep them in the loop, people. And make sure you guys equally appreciate technology and don't let it get in the way of people skills.
Yeah, appreciate people skills. Yeah. Like that a lot. And I guess that applies from what you're saying as much to the leaders as you know, the people you might employ, right? And so like, in other words, your critical thinking skills, which you've mentioned a lot. The other thing that comes to me from what you said today, Dr. Simmons, is just basically having goal clarity, which sounds really obvious until you plunge into using an AI tool and get distracted, right? So obviously you've got, you know, vast resources intellectually and in terms of your military career to draw on. What services do you offer if anyone needs to get in touch with you or work with you?
Yes, I'm at Six Gear Leadership Consulting. It's primarily a leadership coach organization, but I still get into a lot of organization design. I like to emphasize a lot of strategic design. Communication is really critical now. And also one of the key areas is talent management and sustainment. That's some of the areas that I feel like I do a good job focusing on, really big into developing people and getting people to work together. But it's once again, it's Six Gear Consulting.
Come on. So sixgearconsulting.com.
It's like XTH. Six Gear really means common sense. You know, that means, you know, using people skills, integrating that with technology, operating on information, how we would die on burning people skills. That's what the Six Gear is about. That was the origin of it. It was really sixth sense, just common sense, and merging it with technology.
Sixth sense and common sense, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I like that a lot. I mean, I think that, yeah, there's no substitute for good common sense. And it turns out common sense isn't common, right? It's actually quite a rare commodity. It's the wrong word. And yet I know exactly what you mean. Some kind of practical, I guess it's an intuition that comes from years of experience, right? And that's hard to replicate with an automatic system. So really nice to bring an interview to a close with somebody who's, you know, so deep in technology with the kind of thinking that actually as humans, we still have a role to play. That's kind of reassuring for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great. Well, look, Dr. Simmons, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you. You've been really very, very intellectually stimulating. And I hope that the audience goes away and reflects on these very important things. So just remains for me to say thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Do you want to grow your Amazon business bigger or faster? I bet you do. If so, a free audit of your Amazon business can help you see and avoid threats and find some golden missed opportunities. Generally, I charge at least $150 an hour these days for my time, but this is free. You can be a reseller or a brand owner. All I ask is that you're doing at least a few thousand dollars a month in sales. If you are, just go to myamazonaudit.com, scroll down, click on Amazon Audit and book in a time and we'll see each other on a Zoom call. That's myamazonaudit.com. Thank you very much for listening and I hope to see you on a call soon. Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast for six and seven figure Amazon sellers. I really hope you found the show helpful to you. Please don't forget to subscribe to the show. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please do leave us a quick star rating. It will take you all of 30 seconds to do it, but it does mean we can be found by and help many more e-commerce business builders. I wish you fast and profitable scaling, and I hope you enjoy the process of building your seven-figure Amazon business. Thanks very much for listening.